Recording this computer. So we are in the situation studied in the last lecture. And it was proven that the whole space is the direct sum of this G lambda T and some complementary space. Well, what is this complementary space? It is a null space of T minus lambda I to power n. And the generalized eigenvalue space is, sorry.
It'd be the range, right?
Right, thank you. Okay, let me do a dirty trick. This thing is that while I have to use technology. This is the range as you observed, right? And in fact, this range is the direct sum of other generalized eigenspaces for all eigenvalues which are not equal to lambda. So overall, V is the direct sum of the generalized spaces overall eigenvalues. This is the picture. So why? I didn't claim this last things in the previous lecture, so let me explain why it is so. Well, first of all, the characteristic polynomial of direct sum is the product of characteristic polynomials. So we have operator T acting in the space V, and then the space V is split as the sum. Well, it is so far it is split like here. So we have two subspaces. The generalized space for eigenspace for lambda and this range of T minus lambda. Then we can consider, these two spaces, the range and the null space, are invariant, are T invariant. It was proven last time. And each time when we have splitting orthogonal sum decomposition of vector space where our operator acts, we can consider restriction of T to this and restriction of T to that. They have their characteristic polynomials. And we can observe that this characteristic polynomial of the whole T, the characteristic polynomial of whole T, is the product of characteristic polynomial of T restricted to this G and characteristic polynomial of T restricted to this range. I do not write in detail, but you understand me, I guess. So why is this so? Because we can reduce our polynomial to, well, really, then there is a basis in this space in which T is the block sum of matrix representing this part matrix representing that part, then zeros here. And when you calculate characteristic polynomial, you have a block sum of two matrices. The determinants are product. The determinant of the whole matrix is the product of determinants of this sums. And that's why we have this. So look, the characteristic polynomial of that is just the whole part of characteristic polynomial of T, which has this form, T minus lambda to lambda I to some power. And the rest is the rest of them. And we can apply the same construction to each of them separately. To treat this in the same way as we treated T in the beginning. And in this way we get that. However, we have summons from the very beginning, just generalized eigenspaces, and I can prove directly that let me bring you a little bit closer to the camera, otherwise I will look strange there. It doesn't like to enlarge this. Okay, anyway, I will experiment this later. So let me just explain why this generalized eigenspaces are forming direct sum decomposition of V independently from this inductive consideration. So I will prove the following claim, which is contained in the textbook somewhere, that if I pick up some eigenvectors U1, etc., UK, correspondent to different, these are generalized eigenvectors. And they correspond to different, pairwise different eigenvalues. So under these assumptions, this U1, etc., UK are linearly independent. Okay? Do you see what I'm going to prove now? I want to prove that this is really a direct sum decomposition. What does it mean? It means that if I pick up non-trivial, non-zero vectors from each of them, these non-trivial vectors will be linearly independent. This is the definition of direct sum. And assume that there is some linear combination of these vectors, which is equal to zero. I have to prove then each coefficient then must be zero, right? I'm going to prove that each coefficient here is zero. Let me pick up any one of them, aj. I want to prove that this aj is equal to zero. Well, we have the correspondent vector uj belonging to g lambda j t, which means that it is annihilated by t minus lambda j I to some power k. I don't know, kj, well, anyway, some power k. But original vector is not zero. Uj is not zero. Otherwise, of course, nothing could be expected like this. So there is a minimal k for which uj doesn't belong to no. So let me take k prime, which is a minimal number.
Why is it the minimum?
I want to take minimal number for which it is not zero. Not so. For which uj doesn't belong to this null space. Look what I'm going to do. So if I apply this operator t minus lambda j to power k prime to uj, I will get not zero. Now, if I apply this to other vectors, of course, it also wouldn't be zero because they belong to other generalized eigenspaces. But I want to kill them. I can kill them in the following way. For each I, which is not j, I will take t minus lambda I to power n, just for sure to kill the corresponding ui. And I multiply all these powers. So let me take the polynomial, which is t minus lambda j k prime, times product of all this t minus lambda I to power n for lambda I not equal to lambda j. I is not equal to j. Then what will happen? I multiply this operator, I apply this operator to this sum, to the sum that was assumed. Okay, it is by linearity the following. So it is the sum of ai ui. Now, for each summand, I will apply to this operator in its own way. You see, this this is a product of operator. This is a composition of operator. And they commute. So I can apply to u sub I, any of them first, and then after that, something else. So, to j, I will apply to uj just this operator, it is not zero. And after that, all the rest. So you take uj, you apply t minus lambda j I to power k, it is not zero. But the next application of t minus lambda j I would kill it. So this to power k plus one of u j is equal to zero. Oh, I see what you mean, and I replied to your answer in the wrong way. This is not minimal, this is maximal.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, you are right. Thank you. Correct. So this is maximal for which it is not zero. So the next one would give us zero. But this means that the result of application of kth power is already an eigenvector, true eigenvalue, eigenvector, not generalized, for lambda j. So the next applications of t would multiply it by lambda j. And if I apply to it this apparatus, t minus lambda ii, it wouldn't kill it because it would multiply by lambda minus lambda j minus lambda I to some power. And they are not equal, all this operator, all this eigenvalue. So this would give you non-zero. So after application of the whole operator to u sub j, it would survive, while the others would be killed by the corresponding factor. And since the whole thing was zero, we get that aj should be zero. I just distinguished one term and proved that the coefficient that it must be zero. Questions? Maybe I have to repeat something. It is similar to the proof that we made for eigenvectors. And basically, it is a generalization of it. So, what does it mean? If you do not mind, I will continue. Let me see. I deprived you from speaking. Unmute. If you like, you may object.
It doesn't work. Please fix it.
Okay. No questions? Let me then go ahead. Hence we have the following situation. The whole our space V is the direct sum of the generalized eigenspaces. And we want to understand how T acts in each of them. This decomposition is invariant with respect to T. So it would be enough to consider just one of these spaces and understand what's going on, how this T acts. So let us concentrate on one of them. So we have some eigenvalue lambda T and this generalized eigenspace correspondent to lambda. It contains necessarily non-zero if lambda is the root of characteristic polynomial, then we have true eigenvectors there, non-zero eigenspace corresponding to the same vector lambda. And let us consider on this space operator S, which is T minus lambda I. We know that nth power of this operator on that space is equal to zero. So we have this, which is just null space for S. And then it is contained in the null space of S squared, null space for S cubed, and so on. And after all, the null space of Sn, S to power n, is the whole G lambda t, the whole space that we consider now. Each time when I pass from the space to the next one until it will stabilize, I add some vectors. So we have the following picture, which I tried to draw last time. So we have this null space of S. And if to consider S, it acts, it kills everything. Each vector here goes to zero by S. It's eigenvectors. Now we have the next space, which is null S squared. And it consists of this and the rest. And we can split it as a direct sum of null S and what else is contained there. Of course, it may happen that nothing and we are done, then our generalized vector eigenspace is just a usual eigenspace. But it may happen that there are extra vectors and we can split them out from this to represent this space as null S plus something. This splitting is not natural. This splitting is not natural. We can select just, natural with respect to action of T. What will happen if we take any vector from this complement? It will be mapped to the null space. Why? By S. S would map any vector, any non-zero vector here to null space of S. Well, why so? Because what could happen? It could also, so the square of S would annihilate it. If this vector would be killed already by S, would be moved to zero already by S, then it should be contained in null S. So it should be expressed in other vectors. In the vectors in the null S, which is already selected, and so we just split them away. So we have some vectors, and the map here on these vectors is injective. If I select whatever basis here, it would be made it would be mapped injectively. Well, don't worry about basis. I just splitted this space into the subspace null S and this U1. And I claim that vectors from U1 are mapped injectively. Maybe not onto the whole null space. And then I continue, I enlarge this to null of S cube and take the direct complement U2 of what I had, null S squared. And again, you will see that it is mapped injectively to this part. And I continue in this way. At some point it will be exhausted. And then I will start my job in a sense. It comes to the final step, the final stage. So let us consider in this final, the last non-trivial U, K, some basis. It is mapped injectively to the next UP. I take the images, not only injectively, they are all linearly independent here. I take these elements, and if needed, I add more vectors to get basis in the next U. Then I apply again my S. So after all, it will be the following picture. Some vectors at the very top, they go to the part of basis of the next stage, plus some other vectors. We have them going to the next U. Take the images as a part of basis. Well, they are linearly independent, and add what is necessary to have a basis there. And at the end, we will have a basis in null space of S. So if I take just one sequence of vectors emerging in this way, doesn't matter from the very top or from some intermediate stage, what I get? I get a sequence of vectors. Let me enumerate them from the left to right. It is not a natural order. I will enumerate them in this way. This is K. So U1, U2, and so on, UK. Small. So what we have, S of U R is U R minus 1. What is the matrix of this S in this basis? So let us consider just vector space generated by this U1 U K, and write down the action of this. With the first vector, S does the following thing, just annihilates it. U1 goes to 0. U2 goes to U1. U3 goes to U2. And overall, we get a matrix which we already have seen. So on diagonal and below, we have all zeros. Then on this line next to diagonal, slightly above, we have all ones. And then above, we have all zeros. This is the matrix for S. Now, what about T? Well, S is T minus lambda I. So from here, T is S plus lambda I. So to get a matrix for T from this matrix from S, I have to add lambda on the diagonal. So on diagonal now, lambda, below diagonal zero, on one line on the next diagonal once, and then zero again. So this is the matrix for Jordan block. Okay. And the whole matrix is a block matrix of this matrices. So S, no, I restricted S only to this sequence, to the space generated by one sequence of such vectors. Overall, there will be several blocks like that of different size, because I could start not here, but from some other place. And the sum of them will have a dimension. The block sum of them will have dimension, which is just the dimension of G lambda T. The whole operator now is split into these Jordan blocks. Jordan blocks are organized to the sum for over lambdas for generalized eigenspaces, and this is just the structure of the whole operator. Questions about this? This is the statement about the structure of the whole operator. The whole operator is the sum of the Jordan blocks. Jordan blocks themselves are not natural. It is just something which can split off invariant subspace of T. But if you take two Jordan blocks of the same size, with the same lambda, what you can make, you can take the sum of them and split in another way. So there is no natural splitting. Natural splitting that is contained in this picture is splitting into generalized eigenspaces. And then each of them is split artificially. Filtration is natural. Filtration by this null spaces of powers of S. But Jordan block passes through various stages there. So it's Jordan block is itself represented as a sum of increasing collection of subspaces, invariant subspaces. You can take the last vector or the last two vectors and so on. And this is invariant subspaces which make the union, which is this Jordan block. The decomposition, so the decomposition is not natural. And what happens to this decomposition when you start to deform your operator is a difficult question. You will, or probably you have already solved this in the homework. There was a problem about this, about an operator which is of rank one. It's an operator which is a product of two matrices, column by row. Have you done this? Questions about that? Under some conditions, this operator is diagonalizable, or generic matrices. It is diagonalizable. And most eigenvalues are zero. One is not zero, but it may happen that this one becomes zero. But then it becomes linearly dependent on the rest of them. So the correspondent eigenspace zero, correspondent to the zero eigenvalue is of codimension one. And there is one Jordan block. You should find it there in this problem. I won't solve this problem overall, but I just want to attract your attention to this example because it is an interesting example. Okay, probably we'll come back to this later. Any questions so far?
Is the N where the null of S to the N, like the maximum, is that always the dimension of V?
No, we have to discuss this, right? It is enough, usually much lower power. N is an estimate from above. It happens only if there is only one eigenvalue, that the whole polynomial is characteristic polynomial is x minus lambda to power n. And there is only one Jordan block. So the whole operator looks like that. What happens in detail? You can see everything now because you see the picture of the whole operator. We have decomposition of it into the Jordan blocks in the appropriate basis. And there is a corresponding factorization of the characteristic polynomial. The characteristic polynomial of a Jordan block is like that, where n is just the size of this Jordan block. So let me denote it by an I. Now, characteristic polynomial of the whole operator is a product of such thing. And since the same eigenvalue may be involved in several Jordan blocks, it may happen that we have other factors like this. Okay. Whatever. Some sequence of Jordan blocks, and each of them contributes to the characteristic polynomial of our operator as a factor like this. So there may be different eigenvalues, so x minus mu to some powers. And there is another notion related to the characteristic polynomial. First let me explain, introduce
what X is.
Yeah.
X is the characteristic polynomial.
Chi t of x is the polynomial which is determinant of t minus xi. Here, x is a variable. This is called characteristic polynomial. We considered it already in the previous chapter. And this characteristic polynomial splits into factors which correspond to the Jordan blocks. Jordan blocks split into classes corresponding to eigenvalues. So for each eigenvalue, we have a number of multiplicities. There is a notion of multiplicity of one eigenvalue. Multiplicity of eigenvalue. This is just the total sum of dimensions of the Jordan blocks. So in the characteristic polynomial, we have x minus lambda to power m, which is this, okay, multiplicity of lambda. So the whole polynomial is the product over all eigenvalues of such polynomial, of binomial to power multiplicity. So the sum of all multiplicities for all lambdas is equal to the dimension of the space. Okay? So far, is it clear?
Yes.
Now, I want to formulate now a famous theorem. Cayley Hamilton theorem. It looks very nice. The polynomial of operator T evaluated at operator T is the zero operator. So again, the assumption is that we have a operator and it has characteristic polynomial. So if you plug in instead of this variable x here, formal variable, our polynomial, we can evaluate the characteristic polynomial and the result is zero. At first glance, it looks like we do something unusual. We evaluate polynomial so far used only for evaluation. We evaluated it only in eigenvalues. Now we evaluate it at operator. But the result is very simple. So first of all, we can do the following. What does it mean that this characteristic polynomial is equal to zero? It means that it's as an operator, it annihilates any vector for any u from our space V. And any vector can be split into vectors in the corresponding Jordan blocks, can be split using this basis which gives Jordan blocks. It is enough that this characteristic polynomial of T at each of the summons will be zero. And at each of the summons, it is obvious, it is already a part of this characteristic polynomial, a factor. So X, you replace X with a T, so T minus lambda I to some power N of U equals zero. Well, for N, it is enough to take just the correspondent multiplicity of lambda. Instead of power of the whole, dimension of the whole space, we can take multiplicity of lambda. And this is certainly zero. So the meaning of this theorem is very simple. Now, one can ask if there are other polynomials such that P of T equals zero. The answer can be given as a definition. There is really a minimal polynomial with this property. And this minimal polynomial is a factor of the characteristic polynomial. So, definition, minimal polynomial for operator T is the polynomial of minimal degree, which is monic in the sense that it starts with power of variable, and then something else. So the top coefficient is 1. This assumption is done to make it unique. So polynomial like that of minimal degree. Such that P of T equals 0. It is called minimal polynomial of operator T. This polynomial exists and unique. Why it exists? Well, because there is at least this characteristic polynomial which annihilates operator T and which has this property, this monic. And we may consider all such polynomials. The product of polynomials of this kind, well, really the product of this polynomial by any other polynomial also is annihilating T. If we assume that there are two polynomials like that, then we can make linear combinations of them, and they will also have this property. We have to take extra care about the highest term. It's not difficult, it just can be done by choice of numerical coefficients. And then you discover that any polynomial which annihilates this T is divisible by the polynomial of minimal degree. In the language of ideals, this means that this polynomials which are annihilating T form an ideal, and the ring of polynomials in one variable, coefficients in a field, is a principal domain, so each ideal is principal, each ideal is generated by one polynomial. So what, instead of referring to this general theory about ideals, I can do this job in this special environment. Is it very useful? Well, depends on the problem. But at least the result is that the characteristic polynomial is not usually the best, the smallest one, for which conclusion of Cayley-Hamilton theorem works. There is much smaller. Well, usual. It's a good point to discuss what is usual. For usual operator, if you take a random operator, an operator which is just picked up accidentally, all this theory is not needed. It has maximally many eigenvalues. It has the number of different eigenvalues will be just the dimension of the space. And all Jordan blocks will one by one. It is not needed. What we discuss now quite complicated picture with generalized eigenvalues, eigenspaces, with Jordan blocks, is the result of attempt to cover all possible cases. Generically, only this. So if you are allowed to manipulate with coefficients, to check coefficients, then certainly all this stuff is not needed. However, you have seen in the example exercise from the homework that sometimes operators come not accidentally, but by some specific construction. There it was a product of one by n matrix by n by one matrix. And then it is not accident. And then Jordan block appears, and it may appear even in a more massive way than there in this example. Questions, please. No questions? Should we go further?
Actually, so on the last homework, there's a problem that like t-square, the square of some operator is the identity. So is that the same idea?
No, this is completely a different story. Not completely. So the identity there, t-square equals identity, is a minimal polynomial. And therefore you can see what are eigenvalues. Eigenvalues are roots of x squared minus one. So plus or minus one.
So I'm saying like, so in that case we have factor that like t squared into t minus I times t plus I.
T minus I, T plus I, no. T squared is not equal negative identity. It is identity, I guess, in the problem, if I remember correctly. And then the roots are real, plus minus one. And here...
yeah, I mean, T minus I times T plus I, it is just T squared minus I equal to zero. So T squared.
Okay, your I is one. It is identity operator. It is not complex number I, right?
Yeah. Identity, yeah.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
But this is about group actions.
And that would be the eigenvalue?
Hmm?
And that plus minus one would be the eigenvalues?
Yes, because the minimal polynomial then is this one, x squared minus one. But you have to do something special there. It is a special situation. It is a situation of action of a group Z2 made of two elements. Different ideas. So Jordan blocks wouldn't appear here and wouldn't work. And this is what you have to prove in that problem. But you do not need to do this explicitly. It is just enough to solve the problem.
All right, thank you.
Welcome. Okay, now we have to move ahead and well, basically, in the textbook, it is backwards. We have to consider now operators in vector spaces with extra structure. First of all, spaces with extra structure. Quite often, it is thought of as geometric spaces with geometry. Usual Euclidean geometry happens in the space which after fixing one point can be considered as vector spaces. You can associate with each point in this space a vector from the origin to that point, the position vector of this space. And many statements of geometry become statements about vectors. But there is an extra structure in geometry which cannot be deduced just from the structure of vector space. We can say about collinearity of points, we can discuss this in terms of vectors. But the length of the vector is something extra. And to speak about all geometric phenomena, we need to add this ability to measure length, to measure distances. This is done usually, say, in Rn by taking a norm of a vector, by defining a norm of a vector, or rather dot product. They can define each other, we will see this. So from the point of view of linear algebra, this is the following structure. So we have our vector space, and we have bilinear map to the ground field. Say if we consider real geometry, this will be the field of reals and the vector spaces will be over real numbers. But quite often the internal needs of this theory would force us to extend the field and consider complex spaces and complex bilinear forms and so on. And it is useful also outside of geometry in function theory. So we will consider the following setup. We have a vector space, finite dimensional vector space, and we have a bilinear form. Well, sometimes bilinear, sometimes not. If this is over real numbers, then basically any vector space is Rn, and we would consider a map like this, which if we are careful about choice of basis of the space, can be defined by a very simple formula. Say for vector x and vector y, it should give us what is called dot product. It is slightly different formula from what we used to. We have here summation over all indices, and even if I will put indices, number characterizing the coordinates upstairs, if it is upper index, it doesn't fit to Einstein formula. The situation is improved if we define this pairing, if you will remember about it, about this bilinear form, as some independent object. So we have G, what is called metric tensor, which is 2 by a tensor of this kind, and then the formula would look like this. Now I am not doing a careful choice of coordinate system. I just take arbitrary coordinate system and represent in this system the function by its coordinate, like a bilinear map. And here we have the Einstein notation, so we sum up all values of I and j. And look, the indices are in order. It has some nice properties. We can express many geometric things, basically all geometric quantities related to this vectors through this tensor, through metric tensor. In particular, the length of a vector is square root of g I x I. Sorry. Like this. Dot product of a vector by itself, and then take a square root of it, the usual things. And this is a positive number if you have just straightforward generalization of dot product. And there is a temptation when we go to complex numbers to keep these nice properties. But it is impossible to keep them if you just keep the dot product bilinear. It should become sesquilinear, 1 point half linear, to have the square of a vector positive and many other properties. There are still situations when bilinear forms are interesting, make sense. And we can do this over complex numbers as well as over real numbers. Moreover, this dot product is symmetric, it's a symmetric tensor. And sometimes it makes sense to consider skew symmetric especially in symplectic geometry. There is a geometry which comes from mechanics, and there this form should be skew symmetric over reals. So we have several types of forms in the textbook. Only one kind closely associated with analysis is considered. It is so-called Hermitian. Hermitian forms, which are sesquilinear with symmetry which involves complex conjugation. And this stuff is presented in detail. So let me just repeat the definitions, and we will consider this in more details next time. So we consider finite dimensional vector space over field F in general, we fix map from tensor of type 2-0. So bilinear form. And it may be symmetric or skew symmetric. Symmetric is, as you know, when for any two vectors we have this identity. Skew symmetric is when you have negative sign in front of the right hand side. But there is a special Hermitian situation. It is considered in a book, in the textbook, in the situation when F is C, the field of complex numbers. You know, in C there is a map from this field to itself, which sends a complex number X plus IY to X minus IY, the complex conjugation. And then a form, a map from V times V to C can be required to be symmetric, Hermitian symmetric is called, in the following way. G of VW equals the complex conjugate of GWV. And it's called Hermitian. Then we cannot still require that this map is bilinear. Because of this conjugation.
We can or we can't?
We cannot. Because if you take a factor here, say G lambda V W, it is lambda G V W. Then it is G of W, assume that it is Hermitian, and then it is linear, and then it would be what? It would be complex conjugate of lambda G W V. Now, the complex conjugate of the product is the product of complex conjugates. And by this Hermitian symmetry, it is the same as lambda bar G V W. So we see that this O rules may work only in the situation when lambda is equal to lambda bar. It's not good.
Then it must be real.
Then it must be real. So, but the space is complex, so we can multiply everything by complex numbers. So if we want to keep everything in order, we have to require that along one variable, it is linear. It is homogeneous. Lambda gets out as lambda. And along the other, it is conjugated. So G of V lambda W is lambda bar g v double. Then everything is fine. And this is what is called sesquilinear. So it is linear in one variable and half linear along the other one. It's a little bit strange, but it gives a nice extension of the real situation. Most of formulas are transformed in a wise way and stay making sense. So it is useful. But I have no time anymore, and let me continue next, so the day after tomorrow. So again, please, if you will have questions, come on my office hours or any other time. I will be happy to answer. That's all for today.
Excuse me?
That's all for today.
Okay, all right.
The time is over, right?
Yeah, the time is over.
Okay.